Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That is Embryonic Journey on Surrealistic Pillow. The Jefferson Airplane came out in 1967. Just a great instrumental tune. Actually kind of fits the show.
It does. It actually sounds as contemporary as it did then.
There you go. This is The Writer's Block. We're on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio tonight with my lovely, charming, delightful co-host, Bobby Jean Bell.
Happy to be here.
Oh, there you go. I was going to say, okay. And we are, I have to say that we just, Bobby Jean and Jim, her husband Jim, were at the main theater last Friday for a concert with Almeda Bradshaw. In which case, right in the middle of intermission, they got a nice plaque and it was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
I know it was great because Bobby Jean was crying. So
I was.
I know.
Laughing and crying at the same time, just like those drama masks, feeling joy and sorrow at the same moment.
Yeah. And it was, and of course, Almeda's show was.
Yes,
wonderful.
She was wonderful. She was so excited and so prepared, and she'd been counting the days for a year to that evening.
I sent John Bergstrom a copy of Jonah Blue.
Oh, good.
And he got back to me, and he goes, done.
Yeah.
Now I got to think about a song.
Uh-huh, absolutely. He needs to do a song.
Yeah. And still, Jonah Blue is still kicking. So.
Yeah, great.
I'm really happy with that. It's just getting a lot of traction, so I'm really glad about that. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books. And we're there, and we're hanging around. We do help new authors get their stuff straightened out, do their formatting, their editing, proofreading. Help you get it published on the shelf so people can actually buy it, or if you give them away. And, of course, this last Monday, Richard Polinelli's last Jack Dell'Orto book came out, and I believe that you can now order that on Amazon, along with Richard's other great titles, one of which was called Escaping Infinity, which happens to be my favorite. And then, of course, Jonah Blue is one of our titles in Tuscany Bay, and there's a few others, so... give us a look on the internet. Of course, the address there is blackdogpublishing.co, and it takes you right to Tuscany Bay. And by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mountain Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. If you are going to shop online, go to www.scvoutwest.com. Enter the code WB100 and receive $10 off on your order. And their toll-free number, direct dial, is 877-340-9378. And their concert series, this was the last one last Friday of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be the last one that will be the Out West concert series.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a sad thing for all of us that like to go out there to the theater. It was my first chance to go. And I was totally impressed.
Well, and it will continue. It'll have a slightly different name, but two amazing performers have been booked for January and February. Dave Stamey comes in January, and New West comes in February, and it'll be organized and hosted by the Western Music Association California chapter. And SCV TV will still film, just we won't be there.
There
but
you
it
go.
Continues.
There you go. And we have one more sponsor.
Yes, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM truckload today at 1-844-653-7789 and ask for Mike Matruski or any of the fine Target TFM staff and tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. If you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way the most expedient way possible is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry, bar none. So call 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. No fooling. You won't be sorry you did. And we thank them for their sponsorship.
We do. Actually, I talked to Mike yesterday. He was at the SEMA show. And it was just a big automotive show in Las Vegas, and he called and he wanted to know where a certain booth was. I don't know. I'm not there. I don't know. But he had to send me pictures, of course, of him looking out on his balcony overlooking the strip because he had a really nice suite. And they had a big party going on.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, brat. But this is what you get when you're an entrepreneur, I suppose. If you want to call in and listen to or talk to our tonight's guest, which you may want to, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And tonight's guest is a trial lawyer in Austin, Texas. He's a graduate of Texas Tech University, summa cum laude, 1981, and the University of Texas Law School, 1984. He has been practicing law for more than 30 years. He primarily represents personal injury clients and has been board certified in personal injury law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization since 1991. He has been consistently recognized as a super lawyer by Texas Monthly Magazine. I wonder what a super lawyer is. But I don't know. Maybe this one doesn't take bribes. Beginning in 2003 and as an advocate on the American Board of Trial Advocates. While he has co-authored numerous law journal articles and frequently presents papers at continuing legal education conferences, A Minor Fall, which is the book that he has written, it's his very first novel, is his first foray into published fiction. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Price Ainsworth. Price, you with us? Did we lose you?
Uh-oh. Hello, Price, are you there?
Price? Really? Okay.
Do you have to call him?
I'm going to have to call him again. Okay, fine.
Jim.
Yo, there you are.
Yay!
Hello. There you are.
I was saying hello. You couldn't hear me.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, we got you now.
Well, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, well, you haven't seen nothing yet, pal. I liked your bio. That actually comes from your agent or your publicist, Merrill Moss Media.
Right.
Yeah. They're good folks over there. We actually do quite a bit with them. So, your first novel is a novel called A Minor Fall, and it is a story about. Actually, you tell the story.
Yeah, tell us about this book.
First, I have to know if this is somewhat autobiographical.
Well, you know, if you practice law for 30 years, you're going to meet a lot of lawyers, and some of their stories are better than others.
There you go.
I've worked some of their stories in. You know, on the surface, it's the story about a bright young lawyer that's practicing personal injury trial law in Houston, and he makes some bad choices. But beneath the surface, it's my reimagining of the Old Testament story of David.
Right.
And Here he's a young lawyer named Davey practicing in Houston. You remember in the David story, he has battles with Goliath.
Sure.
He serves King Saul, and he runs into a Bathsheba character. In our book, his name is Davy, and he works for the senior partner named Sullivan, and he eventually meets Beth Sheehan, who's a contract lawyer with the firm. So that's the context, anyway.
You know, when we both read the book and thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if you saw that Jim posted a wonderful review today on Amazon. It was very fun as I began to do my research, and I finally now, after reading it, you know, I began to read about the book, and I saw Jim's review. But, you know, I didn't know going in that it was, sort of based on David. And as I was reading the book, I thought, you know, this feels kind of familiar. And of course, you start the book right in the very beginning with a quote from Samuel, I think, right? And you refer to Davy. Somebody calls him the Duke of Deuteronomy or something early on. And so that told me that obviously the author, you know, you've got some biblical connections there, so maybe that gave me a heads up. But I didn't really know the intent. I felt it as I was reading the book, and I was quite excited when I discovered that, yeah, I, as a reader, I had it. I was right.
Yep. Yep.
Well, and Bobby, a lot of people just miss it. And hopefully the story holds up on its own. The original worked pretty well, so.
Yes, it did. And I think that I always like to kind of know where a title comes from. And, of course, I had read the blurb on the back of the book. I had some idea where the story was going to go. And I thought, is the character really going to have only a minor fall? Or is this going to be a more major fall? Mm-hmm. You do have to read the book to find that out.
Right.
We're not going to do a spoiler alert. But tell us a little bit about how you came up with that title.
Well, the long version of the story is that it's really how I came up with the idea for the book. My boys were little, and the first Shrek movie had come out, and I had a pickup that only held one CD at a time, and so we had the Shrek soundtrack in the pickup, and we played it over and over and over. And it was the first time I'd ever heard the Hallelujah song by Leonard Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, whoever sings the song on the soundtrack is not the same person that sings it in the movie, and neither one are Leonard Cohen. But the more I listened to that song, I thought, well, you know, that song is about David. And I still don't know what the song has to do with the sound, with the movie.
Yeah.
But I kept listening to the song and I just had an idea about how you could make David a more modern character. And you know, the chorus in the song is the minor fall, the major lift, when you have the change in the keys in the song. And I just thought, well, that's, you know, idea for a title right there. Mm-hmm. So we called it a minor fall. Obviously, Davy in the book has at least a minor fall, and then he actually handles some slip and fall cases and that sort of thing. So there are several falls discussed in the book.
Yeah. Well, and the story of David is such a remarkable story, and is such a story really for every man, because if you remember the story of David, I mean, he's really a phenomenal leader. He's very sage. He's, you know, he's a terrific guy, and he does slip. And for some of us, it's sort of disheartening when we see him do that, but that is the human condition, and God loves him anyway. And so, you know, that's hope for all of us. That if David, you know, if David could have this slip, then if we have that slip, or whatever slip would be in our lives, that doesn't mean that life is over necessarily. You know?
No. Well, I mean, you know, for if your name is Davy, you know, you probably got a pretty good chance. If your name is Jim, not so much.
Now, I got to tell you, as I was reading through the book, and I've mentioned this before on the show, I don't take notes as I read. I really just try to read as a reader, and I don't really try to read as a reviewer or as somebody that's going to interview the author. But as I read the book, I began to wish that I had been keeping a track of the restaurants, the entrees,
and the drinks,
cocktails, the wines. And I know some readers might think, oh, all of that is extemporaneous. We didn't really need that. To me, that brought great layers of life to the book. And I began to, my husband loves to go to restaurants. I'm like, okay, I need to start writing all these down. So when we finally get to New Orleans, we know these are the restaurants to go to. I'm assuming these are all real places. Price,
oh, yeah.
Are they? Yeah.
My dad claims that I've inserted them into the book so that maybe I might get a free meal or a free drink. But my hope was that, you know, if Davey's right about Commander's Palace, or if he's right about Brennan's in Houston, or wherever, mm-hmm. then maybe he's right about the next point he's about to tell us, and mm-hmm. it might add some level of credibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I made an observation, and I actually put it in your review today, is that Davey is nothing if not just an average guy. He's just every man. And the backside of your story, although this is a story of David retold, the backside of the story is that he's just trying to get through his life at this point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's just trying to navigate all the crap that he has stirred up in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And having stirred up a bunch of crap in my life in the past, I was there with him pretty much the entire
mm-hmm.
trip.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it happens kind of nonchalantly in some respects.
I mean, it does.
Which is kind of how life is.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know sometimes when you make decisions, you don't anticipate all of the consequences
right.
that can come from that decision.
Right.
Well, which is true in even
young
the
young and he's ambitious.
Yeah.
Right. And he's married to the boss's
and
daughter.
We like him. Like we
yeah,
like
we
like him. You know,
he wants to emulate the boss, and this is not. Devil Wears Prada, this is more like Devil Wears Brooks Brothers.
Right, right.
He wants to be the guy that is the boss.
Right. And I think a lot of the restaurants and the bistros and the bars and the drinks and the everything was more to emphasize Tim Sullivan
mm-hmm.
and who he was.
Right.
In that Davey tried to emulate him because of all the trapping.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm right, but I mean that's what I got.
Well, Davey enjoyed those perks,
of course.
That went along.
I would have too,
because he worked so closely with
sure.
Tim, who was his father-in-law, which you don't tell us right away.
Right.
You do let the story fill us in as
it
we go.
Percolates.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And then I was curious, as a reader, I'm reading along, and it's all through Davey's eyes, and we're seeing it very much first person, and we get pretty far into the book when you kind of throw us a curveball, and we get another person's view. That was a little jarring at first.
Right.
Tell us about how you made that decision.
Well, the trouble with first person is that we can't ever really tell what other people in the room are thinking. And so my thinking was that I'd just have another first person. And in this case, we switched to in the first part of the book, we switched to Davey's wife, Michelle.
Correct. Right.
What most of us forget on the Bible story is that Saul really did have a daughter named Michelle that married David, and he had a son named Jonathan that was David's best friend.
Best friend. Mm-hmm.
And so I thought I'd work them into the book also.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, if it's just a young male lawyer in Houston, it just seemed limited. It needed more characters and more depth.
Sure.
So I thought trying to tell part of the story from the wife's standpoint and then later from other characters' standpoint
mm-hmm.
would be interesting.
Yeah. Tell us about Dr. Goodsman.
Well, the long version of the story is that at that point in the book, the characters are trying to be everything. They're trying to be the hero, and they're trying to be the master, and they're trying to be the Lord character also. And so I thought, you know, what if we just called the doctor, Dr. God is Man, and looked at the idea that, you know, maybe there is something more than just than man at play here, and that we can't do everything ourselves.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And if we ask for help, maybe we'll get it.
If only
we probably won't if we don't ask for it.
Yeah, if only, you know, it's one of those stories, and we've heard this from many authors, they ask themselves the what if question.
Right.
And I couldn't help but, as I was reading, like, what if he hadn't done that? Or what if he had done that? Or, you know, right. I was compelled to ask.
Or what if he had done that a little bit sooner?
Yes, exactly. Or, you know, he had to wait till this last minute. But again, right. It's the human condition.
Well, he just gets paralyzed by his own guilt.
Right.
And mm-hmm. He just can't let himself do the right thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was extremely apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the last half of the book.
Mm-hmm. But I like them all.
Yeah.
I mean, I even like, you know, Sullivan.
Well, in his own way, he was an okay guy.
I don't think I want to work for him. But
until the very end.
I know.
And then he showed
his true colors, yes. Yeah. But he's human, too.
It'd be nice to meet at the bar and have a cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because you wouldn't have to pay for anything.
I'd love to go to dinner with him.
But yeah, it was.
Probably in the Polo Lounge right now.
wouldn't surprise me. All in all, I think for a first novel price, you nailed it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate your reading it. Not just having me on the show, but it just makes you feel good when somebody says, "I bought the book and I read it."
Yeah.
And, you know, I turned the next page. It just makes you feel good.
Well, that's one of the things we do here on the Writer's Block, is we made a commitment to each other, mm-hmm. and to our audience and to our writers that we bring in. We will read your book.
Yep.
And so you can't hide from us. We will read the book.
We will read between the lines of the book.
Well, we'll ask you to explain between the lines.
So you shared a little bit about the inspiration. Tell us a little bit about the writing process over from when you got the idea to when you wrote the end, you know.
Well, the hardest thing is, if you've got a 9-to-5 job, is finding alone time to sit down and write the book. It seems like I do a lot of reading and writing, but not much fiction writing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so it would be some Saturday mornings and some Sunday afternoons and just sitting at the computer. And then I think the hardest part is showing it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Once you've got it, you've got a paragraph or you've got a chapter, and are you going to let anybody read it? It's kind of a hard decision.
Yeah.
I want them to like it.
I have a built-in reader at home, so.
Yeah, who read it first?
Probably my dad.
Uh-huh. Your dad, Davy's dad in the book is a really wonderful guy.
Cool guy from Abilene.
And tell us about that. And is he like your dad? Because they're into baseball and reading, and I just liked his parents so much.
Yeah, very much so. My dad is retired from teaching at Texas Tech University, and he was the first in his family to finish high school and then the first in his family to go to college, and we give him a hard time that he went away to college and just stayed. And he really was at Tech his whole professional life. And later in life, he started a little used book company where he would buy and sell antique books or old books and
cool.
Online and then at book shows. And he's just an avid reader. He's an interesting guy. He's somewhere in Beijing right now, I think.
Is he?
Mid-80s, and he's
Beijing?
China.
Wow.
So
holy mackerel.
Now baseball kind of plays a little bit of a role, too. Because Davy and his dad, let's see, do I have that right? Davy, as a young man, is, you know, into baseball, right?
Right, right.
And you're calling in tonight from, where are you?
Austin,
which is not too far from Houston.
It's a little bit more than too far.
So congratulations on, of course, you know, we're here in Dodger country, but congratulations to the Astros for bringing the championship home. How was that last night to be, I'm sure you were watching that somewhere.
I was. Everybody's very excited. I think we saw two pretty good teams, though. I bet those two teams play again before it's over.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
It was great to have it come down to the end like that.
This was the first seventh game ever played at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, that's remarkable. And it was really kind of fun listening to the players last night talk about taking it home to Houston and all of what Houston's been through. You make a few comments about the Astros in the book. So I did have fun reading those as I was actually watching the game last night at the same time.
Well, the book is set like in 2005. The Astros are a whole lot better in 2017.
Yeah, 2005, they were kind of a scud
team.
The
Lastros or the Disastros.
Exactly.
Some other acronym.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like the New York Jets.
But the book did just come out this year. We were talking about June. 2005, but I know you said it took you about 10 years to write it. So it just came out in June this year, right?
In June, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful story. And I do have to believe, I do have to agree with Davey and Michelle in that Puss in Boots should have been in the first movie on Shrek as well.
I agree.
Because I have to tell you, one of the funniest lines I ever heard in any movie was in the second movie when they slam the Puss in Boots up against the side of the building and they reach in his pocket and they bring out the catnip.
Oh.
And he turns around and he goes, "He's not mine."
Yeah, that's a cute cat.
That cat is marvelous.
Yep.
Anyway, you find time to write. You see, you have, well, your job isn't exactly 9 to 5, I'm sure.
Well,
or maybe now it is.
Some mornings are earlier than others.
Yeah, yeah. I have to ask you the question because I read this in your bio. What is a super lawyer?
Yeah, what is a super lawyer?
It's some advertising gimmick that somebody's
coming
up with.
Oh, okay.
If you get on this list, you know, that perhaps you'll buy their advertising. About all it's ever done, I thought when I got on the list that you might get some cases out of this. Somebody might call you and say, "Hey, are you a super lawyer?" The only thing I've ever gotten out of it, Jim, is I get ads from the Lexus dealership. Like, well, if you're a super lawyer, you need a super.
Yeah, you need a
Lexus. So, in other words, under that Brooks Brothers suit with that special striped tie, you're not wearing some kind of cool, you know, Superman logo kind of like T-shirt,
underwear.
Right? Or you don't. Maybe you don't want to tell us that.
Did you at least get a plaque?
Yeah, they'll sell you a plaque for a low price, or you can pay it out over the next few months.
You know, it is interesting, though, to tell us again about this book. I enjoyed the legalese part of it. You talk about the personal injury and such, and I luckily have never really found myself in court. I like books that take us into a world. Jim, you and I read many books that take us into a world that we don't really know.
Right.
And I found it really interesting without being dry, without being... you know, that you were teaching us some about that world was very interesting.
It was.
How did you get involved in personal injury law?
Sheer luck. The long version of the story is my college debate partner had grown up in a little ranching community outside of Amarillo, and his mom and a lawyer here in Austin's wife were best friends growing up, and he was always going to come work for this lawyer in Austin. His name is Broadus Spivey. He's just a great lawyer, also in his 80s. And he, my friend called me and said that Broadus needed another law clerk. Would I like to come work for him? And so I came. I don't think I'd ever met a lawyer before I came to Austin, and the first one I met was a personal injury trial lawyer, and he just happened to be a terrific mentor. And you know, that's how I ended up doing personal injury trial law. I really didn't know there was anything else. I'd seen criminal stuff on TV, but the first thing I saw was folks arguing about money and injuries. So that's what I ended up doing.
Well, it's really interesting that you explained the different laws in Texas about how much money you can get on personal injuries and stuff,
and then how it's changed
over the years.
And then there's the suit in Kentucky.
Right.
With the oil, and now we're talking state and federal, and that was really interesting.
There was something going on with that, and I'm sure Tim Sullivan had something going with that one, well, as well,
well yeah,
as his paralegal.
Right. Well, you don't want to, you know, it's not a peculiar or unique device to add a courtroom scene because it always has drama.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you add a courtroom scene. But there's also some, you know, we like to read about successful people, whether it's parties at the Gadsby Mansion or whatever's on TMZ tonight. We like to see what's happening to the successful people. And you know, if Tim Sullivan in this book is a successful lawyer, and he's mm-hmm. got, as you said, Jim, he's got all the trappings of success.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. And yep. he makes a comment that I actually wrote down because I felt like this was really a gold nugget. And he says, early in the book, he's talking to Davey, and he says, human beings have a need to talk to someone. They want to know that somebody agrees with them and is on their side. And we see that over and over and over again in the book. And when Davey doesn't have somebody, doesn't feel he has somebody to talk with, we also see what happens when you don't have somebody to talk to.
Right, right. Well, when alcohol is involved.
He goes a step farther and even says something like, advocacy is just adding a voice.
Right.
And it is one of the most heartening things about being a personal injury trial lawyer is when you stand up for somebody and they appreciate it.
Like Mrs. Henderson.
And they tell you thank mm-hmm. you, and they admire you for doing it, and mm-hmm. and note that, you know, nobody else had done that for them. And that
sure.
really is a heartening part of the, or aspect of the job. Mm-hmm. It's no fun when you lose.
Well, mm-hmm. no doubt.
And your client doesn't get anything, mm-hmm. but
right.
and I'm afraid that happens more often in my life than I would like. But it's an interesting job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you seem to be quite comfortable with it.
Well, he's a super lawyer after all.
He's a super
yeah.
lawyer.
Well,
no plaque and no Lexus, but he is a super lawyer.
You don't have some comfort with it.
Well, and now you've told us that you write sometimes on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday afternoons. Ever get up right. in the middle of the night and have a scene rolling around your brain and go to the computer and write it down?
Yes, and usually I'm not much of a computer guy. I'll have a 4x6 note card, and I'll write a sentence down.
Oh,
and
okay.
And then I may write a bullet point or two just yeah. so I'll remember this is what I want to put here.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the computer and the internet are an incredible tool. If you want to describe what the Peabody Hotel looks like, you just have to pull up the Peabody Hotel and look at a room.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
If you're writing about mountain men and in the 1830s, I don't know how you do that. How do you know where Jonah Blue's house looks like?
Well, you don't.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you just have to kind of,
yeah.
you have to dream it.
Or yeah. you have to look at artwork by people that were painting
right.
from that
sure.
time period,
right.
somewhat. You
right.
know, and read diaries and descriptions, but
and in the Rocky Mountains, there are all kinds of wrecks and old houses that have been left there by the trappers 150 years ago, mm-hmm. 200 years ago, and they're just all they're kind of falling down, and but you kind of get an idea what they look like. They weren't beautiful by any stretch of the imagination, but
no.
they could be chinked up and warm and cozy, and you know that's all
you
needed.
What they knew. It's what they knew.
Right.
Yeah, it's what they knew how to do, and you know, it's like stomping back and forth to the privy in the snow to keep the snow built down. So
anybody that has romantic notions about the old times, whenever those times are,
oh, no.
whether they're you know Roman or they're in the you know, it, you really got to think about all of what that would have meant.
Right.
Those were not the good old days. Let's take a real quick break. I want to listen a little bit to Junie Fisher here. This is the song Hallelujah. It was we mentioned it. It was on Shrek. And let's give a little listen to Junie and kind of give our audience an idea what Hallelujah sounds like. And this is Junie Fisher and Hallelujah.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do ya? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
That's Junie Fisher and her take on Hallelujah. She covered the tune.
Yep, that's from her CD, The Secret Chord.
There you go. Such a pretty song.
It's beautiful.
And she has such a way with words and inflection on her music. Yeah. It's just, she really does a good, nice job.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're doing that to honor you and this book tonight. Isn't that fun?
That's very nice. That was beautiful.
That and Junie Fisher and a beer?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Sounds like a plan.
Man after my own heart.
I don't know. I want to try a sea breeze.
Oh, I know, huh? Go to lunch and you have a sea breeze.
Or the rare breed. That was at the, was that Wild Turkey? Where was that? They had the rare breed.
Yeah. You guys really do read the books. Y'all are making notes.
Oh, yeah.
We make mental notes because we are mental.
Oh, yeah. No, I was salivating during some of these discussions of meals. I mean, I was, my husband's a great cook, and I'm thinking, oh, he would be loving this book on these pages.
Well, you get into a part where he's talking about the food, and you go, oh, God.
Yeah.
Now I have to go have a biscotti.
Yeah. Or
steak.
Or the fact that when Sullivan just walks into the restaurant, they're already all getting ready. They all know what he wants, and this is a guy that's going all over the country, and it doesn't matter, like, where he walks into. They know.
Right.
I mean, the few restaurants and the places, you know, that he goes, he's just knowing. It's like, oh, Sullivan's here. We need to, we need to get
that. And here's
that.
His son-in-law living on bourbon and peanuts.
And cans of mixed nuts.
I know.
Yeah,
huh?
Cans of mixed nuts. Yeah, the mini bar.
Gotta love it. The name of this program is The Writer's Block. Did you ever find yourself with Writer's Block as you were penning this novel?
Oh, you know, I guess... there were times when I didn't really know how I wanted it to end, if it was going to track the biblical story or was I going to diverge from that. But on writing this one, I don't really think there was a block so much as just not getting the chance to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Life gets in the way.
Well, that happens to a lot of us with day jobs. Well, I don't have one anymore, but...
Well, you still kind of do because you're
active
every day.
My publishing company and yeah.
Now, a radio show.
Radio show, reading books a week and he's writing books.
Yeah. He's pretty busy.
So it sounds like it.
Do you have a publisher? Did you independently publish? Tell us a little bit about the publishing process.
Well, it was published by Select Books, a small publisher in New York.
Okay.
And... they've done a great job with it. I thought the book looked really good.
Yeah.
I thought the cover was good. I think they did a good job with
it. Yeah. Bobby Jean has a copy here on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another interesting story. I tried a case 23 years ago this month in Houston. There were a couple of different plaintiffs, and one of the plaintiffs was from Florida, and she brought her own lawyer to the case. An interesting guy named Mike Papantonio.
Good Irish boy.
I was working on this book, and I thought, you know, I've got a friend here in Austin that does some publishing, and I took it to him, and he looked at it and said he would publish it, and we worked up a cover, and I was calling lawyers I knew to get quotes for the back of the book, and I called my friend Broadus Spivey that had given me my first law job, and I thought, well, I'll call Papantonio because even though I hadn't talked to him in 20-something years, he has more of a national practice. And anyway, so I called Papantonio, and he said, well, you know, that's funny. I just finished a book also. Why don't you send me yours, and I'll send you mine? And we did that, and a couple days later, he called me and said, oh, hang on, I've got an agent. Can we send your book to the agent? And the agent sent it to Select Books, and next thing you know, we've got a book out.
Isn't that great? We love those stories.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah, those. I mean, we talk to so many writers,
great
and
story.
Everybody's story is different.
Everybody's story is different.
You know, and it amazes us.
Yeah. Did you get a Did you get a advance? Did you get a advancement? Did you know? Did you get some money?
Advance
when they
royalties.
Did, thank you.
No.
Advance
You're
royalties.
Welcome.
No.
In fact, when they sent me the contract to sign, I picked up the phone and called the publisher and said, you know, this is not really my area of law, but as I read this contract, it doesn't look like I make very much money on this book. And there was kind of this quiet on the other end of the line, and then the guy goes, no, that's pretty much right.
Okay, there's
you might make something on your second book.
Yeah.
And I said, buddy, it took me 57 years to write this, and I don't think I'd hold my breath on the next one.
Okay, Price, there's three words that you have to write down and remember.
Okay.
Shameless self
promotion.
And I got to tell you,
title of my next book.
Yeah.
All of our writers have those three words down pat. Shameless self promotion.
SSP. Okay.
Make your own banners.
Well, you know, to musicians that we know, they talk about their CD is really just an expensive business card.
Right. It really is.
It's just a way to get heard, get it out there, and usually things come later.
Right.
You know?
Well, you find out with your first book that you give more of them away than you do sell.
Yeah. So if this were to be made into a TV movie or a movie, do you have any idea who you'd like to have play some of these characters?
Well, I guess I'm giving it some thought, but we've laughed about it, my family, and my younger brother said, well, when people ask who ought to play Davy, since it's written in first person, just tell them, who's that guy that plays Thor?
Oh.
Well, I could see like a young Tom Hanks kind of guy.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, Tom's a problem.
What I really like is that Miles Teller guy. Everything he makes is good.
Yeah, he is good. But, you know, they'd probably try to, you know, throw Tom Cruise in there. Because that's what they do these days.
Well, he's a little older now.
Oh, I know, but they don't want you to see that.
Oh, well, it's got to be someone who's sort of every man.
An everyday guy.
An everyday kind of guy. Yeah. Attractive, but kind of an everyday kind of guy.
Yeah.
That, you know.
I think that's the Miles Teller guy. And then for Michelle, she's got to be redheaded. So who do you pick for Michelle?
Oh, wow. Not that the pool to pick from is that large.
Emma.
Yeah, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
Yeah.
We got to have somebody play Sullivan, and I'm a Bryan Cranston fan. I'd like Bryan Cranston.
Bryan would be perfect.
Yeah.
Or Sam Elliott.
So Kevin Spacey.
Who's going to be the Beth Sheehan character?
Mm.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
That's a great role.
Open the phone book and pick your finger on it. I have no clue.
Can we make it Nora Jones just so I can meet Nora Jones?
Is your wife listening to this show?
Yes, she is. But she'd like to meet Nora Jones also.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, man.
So what are you working on next?
Yes, I was going to be my next question.
Well, I think it's in the early stages, but I got an idea for a book about an older fella whose wife has developed Alzheimer's, and he's thinking back over their life together, and he's actually sitting in a blind trying to call a turkey up while he's thinking about this. So it takes place over a long period of time and then also in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And you're not going to play with Davy anymore.
You know, I enjoyed Davy, but I think we're going to leave Davy right where we left him in a minor fall.
Mm-hmm. Well, we left him on the way to Austin. So.
Well, and we left him where the doors sort of open. It might be interesting to revisit him like 20 years later. Like, not just pick up like right now.
Yeah.
But to kind of see where life is.
Or
you know,
12 years later, you know,
some
2017.
Further along that he's,
I like that idea.
You know,
like
kind of
idea.
Gotten himself reestablished or whatever, and maybe he's the wise kind of character now, and there's kids or grandkids or I don't know what. You need to figure that out. But it'd be interesting to maybe revisit him down the road.
See, she's going to do this to you. You know that, right?
No, I'm jotting it down while she's telling me.
Well, and actually, Beth, it'd be interesting, not in the same book, but some of these characters, I think sometimes you all invest so much in a character, and you know, it's like the great sitcoms that have spinoffs that sometimes are successful and sometimes not. But sometimes the characters are so great that they could go on and stand alone. I'd like to know what Beth's story is. I liked her.
Yeah.
I liked these characters.
I felt bad for her having to make that phone call.
You put them all in such human situations, and to see how they maneuver through the journey, whatever the next journey is. But I wouldn't necessarily bring them all back together again in a reunion kind of story.
Right.
But you know, they could have their own stories, or even shorts.
Sure,
it's an anthology of short stories where we get to see them all again.
Yeah,
you know?
little bits of their lives.
Yeah, that's something like that. Yeah. You know.
Are you jotting this down too?
One of my favorite characters is the law student in Memphis, Chelsea.
Yes.
We were talking about her actually earlier.
Yeah, we were talking about Chelsea before the show, because you give us a little snapshot there, and she's an interesting gal. And I think all of these characters, I'd like to know what happens to Amy.
Yeah.
And Jonathan and Sullivan, what happens?
Well, he goes and meets the chick out.
Well, I know, but we got a father and a dad. And again, we don't want spoiler alert. Read this book. But you leave us with interesting, really interesting characters.
Right.
And I can't help but think about them and what
that's
life
a,
will be for
that's
them.
That's a huge compliment, Bobby Jean, for you to say that. Just to think that you're trying to imagine where they might be today. It makes my day to hear you say that.
Well, you know, you get to care about these characters as you're reading this book, much as you did when you were writing it.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to tell you, one of the most poignant passages in this entire book was when Davey got the phone call from Beth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
And you could just feel his heart sink.
Oh, yeah.
There's no other feeling like that.
And there's the passage with Dr. Godsman, who's remembering being a young woman and walking with her mom.
Right.
Yeah.
And although I never was in that situation myself, I had friends in that kind of situation.
Sure. Right.
And
sure.
I think you have filled this book with moments that we can all relate to.
Absolutely.
Real that life. Make it sometimes almost hard to read the words.
Right. Or hard to admit the feelings.
Or you kind of go like, I hadn't thought about that. You've just opened a box of memory that maybe we've closed for a while.
I can tell you one other story. I'm going into a mediation this past week, and the mediator's a lawyer about my age, and I'm coming in with my clients. The other lawyer's coming in with his clients, and the mediator holds up his tie up out of his jacket and says, Price, and you look at this tie.
Uh-huh.
And I knew he'd read the book. And I said something like, a red and blue striped tie.
Go figure.
Look more closely. So I walk over and look at the tie, and in the little stripe, there is a little duck head every now and then.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh.
And he says, I got it at the Peabody.
Oh, my gosh.
How funny.
We're starting to laugh about it, and there's a quiet time later, and he said the line that got him was about how independence would be when you find that your parents aren't able to recognize you and your kids stop calling because their own lives are so busy.
Right. Yes.
Right. That's just the age I am and the mediator was, and so that line sticks with us, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hate to do this to you, Price, but we're going to have to sign off. We're going to have to let you go. So if you would, please give our audience your email address and where they can reach you, Facebook or Twitter or whatever you got going.
My email address is price@ainsworth-law.com. And Ainsworth is AINSWORTH -law.com.
Okay.
The book is available wherever fine novels are sold.
I like that. Wherever fine books are sold.
Yeah.
Okay. Price, thank you.
I appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It was fun. It was a hoot. Told you you'd have a good time.
I did.
Good. And I'm going to be sending you a coffee mug.
All right.
Get working on that second novel.
Okay.
Yeah, keep reading so we can, and keep writing so we can keep reading.
Right, and okay. we need to know what happens with Davey.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Price Ainsworth. Wow, what a guy.
That was really fun.
Yeah. It was fun. Good show.
It was a great book. I read I had only read about 100 pages before last night, and I read all last night, and I read today because I just had to know what happened.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't necessarily have to see to the end to talk to him, I just had to know what happens.
Yeah. I picked it up again on Sunday and finished it Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And now we have to read for next week.
Yes, but it's a short book.
Yes, and we got it today.
And, of course, next week, we have the twins. Eric Kaiser and Al Bringus will be with us in studio.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
They are fun. They're great guests, and they're good guys, and they always have wonderful stories to
tell.
We're
into November.
I know. Isn't that scary?
We're like... You know, the end of the year is like 6 weeks or 7 weeks from now.
I know. And next week, of course, is Eric and Al. And then the following week is Thanksgiving, so we'll be dark.
Thanksgiving's two weeks away.
Oh, 2 weeks.
Next week's just the 9th.
Oh.
This is the 2nd, the 9th. And then we have the 16th. And then we have
Thanksgiving. Who's on the 16th? I have no idea.
I don't have my notes in front of me.
Jerry didn't tell me. Anyway. Hang around for next April because John Sanford will be joining us and Bianca Murray and hum if you don't know the words about the apartheid. And that's it for us tonight. Thank you, Bobby Joe, Bobby Jean. What's your name? Fred? Jim?
I'll answer to anything.
Good seeing you. Congratulations again on your awards.
Thank you.
Love hearing that. This is Jim Christina and Bobby Jean Bell. And this is the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio. We are out of here.
It was nice to put the music in there.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Yeah, I couldn't read.
Junie Fisher?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
That's a beautiful CD because it's not Western at all. Every song is just like her favorite music. And she's got blues on there and jazz. One of my favorites is her, the white.
We have to clear out of here.